Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Luther College, offering more than 60 areas of study, including the new data science and neuroscience majors. Dedicated to preparing students for success in a changing world.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Patriotism, it is a word that gets thrown out around a lot. The dictionary definition, or at least one of the definitions, is love for or devotion to one's country. But this word means many different things to many different people. And today we want to know what patriotism means to you. You're welcome to join our show, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. What life experience informs your view of patriotism? Maybe you've come here from another country or grew up with a different kind of government. We'd love to hear your thoughts. 866-780-9100 is the number. Iowa Public Radio producer Ben Stanton went to the farmers market in Washington, Iowa, and he asked people there what patriotism means to them.
My name's Kathleen Stein. I'm a veteran, and patriotism to me, being a veteran, it was standing up for our country and what it means and doing what you got to do. Anytime I see a flag or hear the Star Spangled Banner, I get goosebumps and I want to stand right up. Every time. It doesn't matter if it's at a ball game. It just doesn't matter. It's whenever I see a flag, we have the flag downtown here. Every once in a while, it's huge. And if I wasn't driving, I'd probably stand up and salute it.
Hi, I'm Nancy Rash, and patriotism to me means flying the flag on Flag Day, 4th of July, different holidays. It also means watching documentaries like the Vietnam War that makes it very complicated about thinking about what is patriotism.
My name is Karen Lyons, and I believe that patriotism means to support the United States of America and believe in it, and to support it no matter whether you like one particular person or political party, but to always support it and always to try to protect it.
My name is Darren Dendler, and patriotism means to me is pride in your nation.
My name is Karen Dendler, and patriotism means to me is the sacrifice that people have put forward for their country and those that support those people that put that sacrifice out there.
Okay, my name is Arthur B. Henney, and patriotism to me means serving your country and voting and doing all the good things that'll keep our government in working order. And I spent two hitches in Korea, so I know what a little bit of fighting is all about.
Frank Miller, and patriotism to me means standing for the flag because of what our father-in-laws and brothers and sisters all did for us to keep our freedom, and I highly believe in it.
My name is Terry Falk, and to me patriotism is supporting our troops and standing when the flag is raised, and also during the ceremonies and the football teams and all that other good stuff.
Those are voices from the farmers market in Washington, Iowa. We also want to hear your voice this hour. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. Our email, talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Here's another voice. Historian Tim Walsh is here. He is former director of the Herbert Hoover Library and Museum in West Branch. Hi, Tim.
Nice to be with you, Charity.
Thank you so much for being here. Also joining us today, Donna Hoffman, department head and associate professor of political science at the University of Northern Iowa. Hello, Donna.
Good morning, Charity.
Thank you so much for being here. And Tim, you're going to help us take a look at this idea of patriotism throughout history. It has ebbed and flowed. It has meant many different things, depending on who was president at the time or depending on what's going on in the nation at the time.
Well, and what will surprise people, of course, we've had the flag since the time of the Revolution, Francis Hopkinson's fancy work, it was called, not Betsy Ross. But what will surprise most people is that the Star Spangled Banner, our national anthem, really wasn't codified into law until 1931. And we didn't have a flag code to how to treat the code until 1923. or that the Pledge of Allegiance changed many times. It was codified in law in 1942 and 45 and changed again in 1954. So some of the hallmarks, the icons of what we mean when we talk about patriotism really come relatively recently in our history. But it has always been an issue, really from the time of the Revolution. Who really is the patriot? Is it the person opposing the King of England, or the person who is loyal to the King of England, or perhaps even the person who was indifferent to the King of England? And so in every conflict, we always had two sides. And you see this, and it's that point of friction between freedom of speech and the ability to be a dissenter. As a patriot, you have that right. And also then the person who stands up for the nation and says, I call my fellow citizens to unity, to rally round the flag, as we say.
Well, and looking back through history, I mean, you mentioned the Revolution, and I think a lot of us, of course, on the 4th of July here on National Public Radio, we always read the Declaration of Independence. So that voice of dissent is something that a lot of us think of when we think about the founding of our country and about patriotism. But the idea of what our country is has changed through history as well. And I mean, the Civil War in particular is a time where there was a great deal of shifting.
For those folks who've seen Ken Burns, certainly Vietnam program is on lately now, but the Civil War program will remember Shelby Foote's commentary saying, you know, before the Civil War, we used to say the United States are. And after the Civil War, we said the United States is. Rather than being just states that were an aggregation, as it was, and states' rights and state above nation, as it was before the Civil War, we became one nation after the war. So we've always been a country of many parts, and it's those points of friction that often lead to controversies over what it means to be a patriot and how loyal one is and to which side.
And patriotism seems to reach a peak in moments of crisis,
exactly.
Right?
Absolutely. Every time there's friction, every time the country is attacked, as it was after 9/11 or certainly Pearl Harbor, the country rallies around that common cause. And it certainly was true even during the Civil War. And you see the efforts on the part of the Union to bring together and to rally the northern states to assert unity within the nation.
Now, Donna, of course, when we go to the polls and we vote, that's an act for me that makes me feel extremely patriotic. But people are expressing very different opinions when they go to the polls. The patriotism isn't an idea that belongs to one political party or another, but it is used often by one political party or another.
Yes, most definitely it is. And even if you listen to the clips that you played from the farmers market, there were different perspectives on what patriotism means today to people. None of those are wrong because of these are what people believe, but they are very different perspectives. And so throughout history, patriotism, which is also tied to emotion many times, has been used sometimes even to shut down debate. If you disagree with me, you're unpatriotic. And that is something that, you know, is really not helpful in terms of political discourse. There are, Tim was mentioning rally events, for example. This is a term we actually use in political science, rally around the flag events. So we know that these things also have implications for politics. So, for example, if you have an event that we as political scientists classify as a rally event, it's typically an international crisis of some kind. And then you look at public opinion polling of do you approve of the job the president is doing? You will see what we call rally around the flag events. So the president's approval, whether the president has done anything or not, will spike up. Now, usually that also then falls off very quickly as well. But we might use two examples here. So, for example, in the early 60s, when John F. Kennedy is a new president, he inherits a movement from Eisenhower to a military excursion from Eisenhower to invade Cuba, the Bay of Pigs. The Bay of Pigs goes disastrously wrong. Kennedy even takes some responsibility for that in front of the public. But it was a rally event. His approval rating actually goes up from that. We can see in the aftermath of 9/11, George W. Bush's approval rating, which right before that event had been at its lowest point at his short presidency at that point, spikes up to the highest we have still ever seen in the presidency. simply because the United States was attacked. And if a pollster asks you that question, do you approve or disapprove of the job the president is doing, you're going to say approve many times because it would be unpatriotic, you think, not to at a time in which we're going through some kind of international crisis. So patriotism is really something that is, we might think of it as kind of evolving, and we might even use the term squishy here because it can mean different things at different times to different people.
Well, and let's kind of break down the different kinds of patriotism that you see and that other scholars see. I mean, one would be this uncritical patriotism, that knee-jerk reaction that you support your country no matter what.
Right. So we might call it uncritical patriotism. A little more pejoratively, we might call it blind patriotism. But it is that notion of my country, right or wrong, where oftentimes then there's symbolic attachment, you know, in particular, thinking that protesting the flag is unpatriotic. For example, there's the symbolism to that. So this just reflexively saying, I'm an American, whatever we do, you know, is correct. I'll stand behind my country no matter what. The a contrary view to that, a paradox here, if you will, even would be what we call constructive patriotism. And that is where you are attached to your country, and there's even loyalty there, there's patriotism there, but it's not unquestioning, and it's not uncritical. And here, people who kind of subscribe to this kind of patriotism are wanting the country to live up to its ideals. So this evolving notion of America that Tim was talking about earlier, we might think of the phrase, you know, all men are created equal. Well, what that has meant at different times has meant different things. And there is a critical element to this constructive patriotism in that you're behind your country, but you want it to fulfill the ideals of the country that sometimes America falls short on. And so these are two different kinds of patriotism that can oftentimes conflict. And I think if we look at the current debate with the NFL right now, Colin Kaepernick is exercising that constructive patriotism, and his critics are exercising that uncritical patriotism.
We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. This hour, we're talking about patriotism, and we want to hear from you. What does being patriotic mean to you? What makes you feel like you're patriotic? What life events inform your idea of patriotism? Give us a call. 866-780-9100 is the number. Historian Tim Walsh is here along with Donna Hoffman, department head and associate professor of political science at the University of Northern Iowa.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Luther College, offering more than 60 areas of study, including the new data science and neuroscience majors, dedicated to preparing students for success in a changing world.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about patriotism, what it means to be patriotic. And we want to hear from you, your thoughts about what it means to be patriotic. You can give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me this hour, Donna Hoffman, department head and associate professor of political science at the University of Northern Iowa. Historian Tim Walsh is also here. He's former director of the Herbert Hoover Library and Museum in West Branch. And we've got a lot of people who want to be part of this conversation. So let's get to the phones. Michelle is on the line in Rock Island. Hi, Michelle.
Good morning.
Hi, what would you like to talk about?
Well, just the changes in patriotism. We were an experiment in democracy and a republic under the Constitution, and it changes how we express our love of country. In past wars, we have always had women contributing jewels, household medals, Civil War, American Revolution. And then we went to knitting socks for the Red Cross, knitting socks and rolling bandages in World War I and World War II, our war bonds. And it was something that everyone could get involved in. Now we're in a situation where, as a nation, we are not united in patriotic activities to support our men and women who are fighting, nor the men and women and families who are left at home. And so there's ways that we need to look at supporting those. But patriotism is more than just our men and women in arms. It's, you know, they're saying, they were calling it different things, but it's unconditional patriotism, right or wrong, that there's a sacrifice. And the men taking the knee and the people standing up, I'm one that stands, but I give the people who dissent, and they have the right to show that. And I'm proud. I live in a country that we have people who can freely dissent without being penalized or being sent to jail. And again, our voting is so important, and especially for women, that it was special efforts that people sacrificed, so we have the right to vote. But patriotism is so many, many things. It's not just our flag, even though it's what represents it right. The most.
Well, Michelle, thank you so much for sharing your thoughts today. And Michelle brings up the United States in a time of war. And Tim, I know you've looked at this. We talked about the Civil War and how things changed mm-hmm. a lot then. But let's look at, for example, World War II. This was a time when Americans were asked to sacrifice, when Americans were unified about supporting the war effort. And there were so many things that people on the home front were asked to do.
Absolutely. And in fact, people wanted to participate to the extent that they could. Kids were gathering scrap metal and saving their pennies from their paper out to buy war stamps and so forth to fill up their books and war bonds and so forth and attending rallies. There's no question when a country is, our country particularly, is attacked, we bond and band together in common cause. And yet it's also a time, as patriots, where we became apprehensive of outsiders. So much so, of course, that we incarcerated the Japanese, who were very loyal Japanese Americans in this country. And so there's a dark side at times, even in conflict and with patriotism, and that is who is loyal and who is not, and how do we define that loyalty? So there's passion and there's point of view in everyone's view of patriotism. And at times, it can have some divisive elements to it.
Well, and when we look at World War II, from the perspective that we have today, we see this very stark battle between good and evil, right
Correct.
And wrong. When we look at 18 hours of the Vietnam
That's right.
War, there's no stark black and white there. There are so many shades of gray. Do you feel like that was a point at which our nation's idea of patriotism changed?
I strongly recommend people compare Ken Burns' video production, The War, which is World War II, and how you feel about it and the heroism of these people versus the overwhelming sense of sadness and tragedy that does come through in watching Vietnam. Vietnam actually is a little longer. I think it's 18 hours versus 16 hours in terms of footage. But you realize that, wait a minute, those North Vietnamese soldiers who are soldiers respected in combat, were loyal to and patriotic to their own nation. It's not always just the American perspective that makes things right. It's our point of view versus a different point of view. We had laudable goals in what we were trying to do in helping South Vietnam to establish a democracy. But at the end of the day, we also had to acknowledge that the North Vietnamese had a point of view that had to be acknowledged. So also when people oppose a war in this country, as you see also in the Vietnam footage, young people opposing our conflict, our involvement in the war, they are patriotic, even though it was an unpopular point of view. And they did provocative things that caused conflict and anger, particularly among people who had great respect for the flag, to see a flag being desecrated or burned. And that I'm not approving that, but it does show that conflict over, passionate views can both be patriotic at the same time.
Well, and of course, there was so much division among the American people during that time. But again, with time and hindsight, I mean, looking at the young men who burned their draft cards, many people now see that as an act of patriotism.
Exactly. Time does have a tendency to give us a sense of perspective and wisdom. You know, we revere Abraham Lincoln, but people forget that Abraham Lincoln, in the midst of war, suspended habeas corpus and did not allow any opposition to, I shouldn't say any opposition, but he restricted or chilled opposition to the conscription that was going on during the Civil War. We needed troops. He didn't want dissent. And so he had people arrested, including Dennis Mahoney, the editor of the Dubuque Herald, if anyone remembers that back in time.
Well, and Donna, we mentioned already 9/11 and how patriotism really reached a peak after the United States was attacked in New York and other parts of the country. And then we also saw some political actions following 9/11. I mean, the changing name of French fries was a really interesting moment in our American history, I think.
Right. And if you think back to if you were, you know, alive and remember 9/11, which I would note many of my students don't anymore. But, you know, immediately in the aftermath of that attack, people were concerned with where's the president? That's one of the symbolic aspects of our country, the president, which sometimes can be misplaced when we talk about this notion of patriotism. Congress wanted to do something, so they gather together on the steps of the Capitol and they sing, you know, patriotic songs. But then later, as maybe things got more divisive in terms of, you know, the war on terror in terms of Afghanistan had a lot of popular support. But then as time went on and we start to go into Iraq, the French, for example, did not support our efforts to go into Iraq. And so Congress passed or you know, changed the names in the cafeteria in the Capitol of anything that had French on the before it as a modifier. So French fries became freedom fries, French toast became freedom toast. And that was a reflexive, reactionary thing to try to, again, capitalize in some ways on this notion of patriotism to go beyond Afghanistan, to go into Iraq, which became much more divisive, not as much popular support for that, both domestically as well as internationally. And so there are a lot of examples where the government or politicians in particular seek to capitalize on feelings of patriotism for political purposes.
Let's get back to the phones. Let's see. Sally is up next in Marshalltown. Hi, Sally.
Hi.
Hi. What would you like to talk about?
Well, I am a what's called a convinced friend. I'm a member of the Religious Society of Friends. And so one of the most important freedoms in America to me is the freedom of religion and the freedom to express my beliefs. And in my religion, we don't take oaths and we don't do things like pledge allegiance because we believe that, you know, our word means what we say. So our word is our oath. So it's been challenging from time to time when I've been in situations where, you know, other people, I stand and I put my hand over my heart, but I don't say the pledge because of my religious beliefs. And I feel that I'm still being patriotic in that I am expressing that freedom that we have in the United States to practice our religious beliefs. And also in my religion, we tend to be very involved with social justice issues. And so I feel that it's been it's an expression of our patriotism in America to fight for social justice for those that maybe can't defend themselves or stand up for themselves. And sometimes that's not a very popular view either. And I think that that's what many of these athletes are attempting to do in taking a knee during the national anthem. I think they are expressing their patriotism in terms of being able to have the freedom to speak and express what they believe.
Do you have you experienced people questioning your patriotism, Sally, as you have practiced your beliefs?
Yes, periodically. And as a matter of fact, when my girls were in elementary school, I explained to their teachers that they may not say the Pledge of Allegiance. They might. It was up to them if they wanted to say it or not. But if they chose not to say the Pledge of Allegiance, that they should understand where that comes from and perhaps explain that to other people in the class. And I also, like, even sometimes I've gone to court to be a witness or to prepare for a jury. And, you know, I have to explain. I won't really take an oath on a Bible because I'm Quaker. And they honor that in the courtroom. But other people, they look at you a little strangely. And, you know, I mean, no one has come up to me and said something specifically. But it is uncomfortable.
Well, Sally, thank you so much for sharing your perspective and your unique experience in that way. Let's get back to the phones again. Laura is on the line in Des Moines. Hi, Laura.
Hi, thank you. Great show today. Really awesome. I guess I want to just kind of put this in perspective. We just had what many are calling the largest mass shooting in American history. And actually, the largest mass shooting in American history was Wounded Knee in 1890, so just right after Christmas. And upwards of 300 men, women, and children were shot down. And that was our American government that did that. So I think if we're going to talk about patriotism and
and I'm so very patriotic, but we have to be honest, and when we educate our children, they have to know about the Japanese internment camps. They have to know about what we did in the name of our government to the American, to the Native American people, which, by the way, the American government has not honored one treaty with them, not one, in these many years. So when I see people do things like put the American flag on the back of their window of their truck or wear clothing with it depicted, to me, that is not patriotic. Wearing the flag is not patriotic. It needs to be, there's an etiquette for it, and I think that's important. It's so important, too, to remember that not everybody in this country feels like they are being treated like they should be under this flag. And so when we look at people kneeling, predominantly Black people kneeling at games and things like that, it's them saying to us, sort of this white world, you know, that they live in, that while they may have fought, and many of their family did, fought and died in wars, they didn't get to come home and feel like they were getting an equitable return on giving what they did to this country. So I think we've got to be smart about, you know, and not turn into a fascist nation. You know, that's not what this is about. And I just want to encourage people to be open to that stuff.
Laura, thank you so much for bringing that up. And I mean, as a historian, Tim, when we look at history, so much of what has happened in our nation's history may not fit the story that we like to tell about our nation.
Exactly. Laura brings up the fundamental fact that dissent appropriate treatment of others, and certainly appropriate treatment of those who don't share our views, is fundamentally American and part of the American experience and the American ethos, as reverence for the flag or common cause in a military conflict. And so we really need to acknowledge the patriotism of people who say no, who stand up, and who ultimately have a large measure of courage, or who reflect American values in different ways. We tend to think of patriotism primarily as military, but it is really a function of service to the nation. And so we need to acknowledge the patriotism of the people who serve in the Peace Corps and the State Department, and certainly emergency medical people and fire employees, and firemen and personnel and so forth. Because patriotism is broader than just reverence for the flag and military service. These are fundamental to patriotism, but not exclusive to patriotism.
Well, and Donna, that returns to the point we were talking about earlier with uncritical patriotism versus constructive patriotism. I mean, when scholars look at people who engage in these different kinds of patriotism, they find that people who would be described as constructive patriots tend to be more engaged with current events and know more about our politics of the moment, right?
Right, that's true. So when people have looked at this, those people who have the non-critical or the uncritical patriotism tend to have less political information. They tend to have less political knowledge, and they tend to vote less as well. And so these are things that scholars study because they're interested in these different kinds of patriotism and the expressions of those. And again, to be reflexive, to be critical even, there is the old cliche that dissent is patriotic, is really important in terms of putting the different perspectives people have on patriotism to understand how those are put into action, so for example. And so many times being non-critical or non-reflexive may also mean that you're not engaging with the issues of the day, and then doing some of those things like public service or in particular duty. And we might think of voting, for example, which is a fairly easy form of participation, as a duty. So this balance sometimes that we have in this country that may get off of rights, we all have rights, but we also have responsibilities. And this can go hand in hand with this discussion of patriotism as well.
I want to read a couple of emails as we get to the break here. This one's from Greg in Story City. He says, "My country, right or wrong, I watched the whole Ken Burns Vietnam series. That helped clarify the whole patriotism thing." This one's from Stephanie in Cedar Rapids. "I think of patriotism as devotion to one's own country. That devotion is the same that one would give to a friend or loved one, and includes, when needed, criticism of wrongdoing as well as praise. It's not blind allegiance to a state or ruler, but dedication to the maintenance of one's what is just and good. In the United States, it includes voting, civil awareness, service, and standing up for the rights of those who would be stifled by tyranny. Here's a comment from Clinton in Minnesota. He says, my favorite saying on patriotism dates back to April 7th, 1775, when Samuel Johnson made his famous pronouncement, patriotism is the last refuge of a scoundrel. The quote tells me to refrain from abusing the use or claim of patriotism. The loudest voice is often not the strongest voice. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in a few minutes. We'll share more of your thoughts on patriotism. We also want to hear from you at 866-780-9100. With me, historian Tim Walsh. He's the former director of the Herbert Hoover Library and Museum, and Donna Hoffman, department head and associate professor of political science at the University of Northern Iowa. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about patriotism, what it means to you, what acts make you feel as if you are being patriotic, what your life experience tells you about what patriotism is today in 2017. You're welcome to join the conversation at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me, Donna Hoffman, department head and associate professor of political science at the University of Northern Iowa, and historian Tim Walsh, the former director of the Herbert Hoover Library and Museum. And again, many people on the phone who want to share their thoughts today. Here's Joanne in Des Moines. Hi, Joanne.
Hi.
Hi. What would you like to say?
Well, I think as your guests have alluded to a few minutes ago, I think being patriotic is speaking out when you see your country going in a very, very wrong direction. I think what we did to the Japanese Americans in World War II was very wrong. I think the Vietnam War was very wrong. I think being in Afghanistan is very wrong. And I think, you know, the gun rights people, they really wrap themselves in the Second Amendment and the Bill of Rights. But I think allowing unfettered access to assault rifles so innocent people can be slaughtered over and over again is very, very wrong. And that's what patriotism means to me.
Well, Joanne, thank you so much for sharing your thoughts today. And we do, we see this struggle right now at this moment in time, Donna. We hear people saying, but what about the First Amendment? That's patriotic, too. I mean, this is a political moment where the right to disagree is being questioned.
Yeah, certainly. And, you know, we do have these bundles of rights, and sometimes they come into conflict. You know, the earlier caller that you had talking about how she's a member of she's a Quaker. She didn't mention this, but, you know, they're also conscientious objectors, I believe, in terms of not fighting in wars. And so there are a passel of rights that we have in the United States, but none of them are unconditional. So freedom of speech can be restricted for time, place, and manner, for example. And so these are always disagreements that I think we'll always have in the United States because of different perspectives that we have on freedom of religion or freedom of speech or how we view what is patriotic and what is not patriotic.
Tim, you have something to add?
Yes. As Donna alludes to, too, the Supreme Court addressed this issue in 1989, and there's a wonderful quote from William Brennan in his decision, and it's the question of desecration of the flag and, I suppose, how it touches on patriotism and freedom of speech. And he said, "We do not consecrate the flag by punishing its desecration, for in doing so, we dilute the freedom this cherished emblem represents." And that is so true. It is the conflict between our fundamental right to free speech and our appreciation and reverence for the flag. And at the end, it is the Constitution above the symbol that we have to keep in order.
We've had a number of people call who couldn't stay with us on the line today. This one is an interesting story. Someone called to say that his dad was at Pearl Harbor, and he, the caller, was the last draft for the Vietnam War. His father was in the service for 22 years and always said that people had the right to protest. That's what he was fighting for. His family had a Japanese foreign exchange student whose grandfather had fought in World War II. And this person's father was sitting in the living room with her one day and said, "Tell your grandpa I forgive him, and please ask him to forgive me too." An interesting expression of patriotism there. And let's get back to the phones. Bob is on the line in Rock Island. Hi, Bob.
Hi. It is said that if fascism comes to this country, it'll come wrapped in an American flag. Usually, the blind patriots outnumber the constructive patriots, unfortunately. During the Vietnam War, if you protested the Vietnam War, oftentimes construction workers would assault the protesters, would throw bricks at them, and the construction workers considered themselves to be patriots. With the Iraq invasion, at that time, almost everybody in this country, maybe 80%, 90%, were part of the hysteria. And if you opposed going into Iraq, you were a traitor. Now, there's been quite a turnaround because Donald Trump criticized our going, during the campaign, he criticized our going into Iraq, and he criticized George Bush for making that decision. Also, one more point. Before Vietnam, the way the draft worked was the target age was 25 years old. But the older college students and grad students were articulate, and they spoke out against the war. So the obvious solution is to make the target age 18 years old and work up toward 25. So therefore, the best solution to criticism of the Vietnam War is to draft 18-year-olds rather than 25-year-olds. And that was considered a very good thing to do by most people in this country. It was our policy.
Well, Bob, thank you for sharing your thoughts with that. It is interesting how I think our feelings about service have changed since Vietnam, which was, of course, a draft, and many people who didn't necessarily want to become part of the service became part of the service, where our recent conflicts have all been with the use of volunteers.
Yeah, and there are people who argue that one of the things that we could do to stimulate patriotism and love of country and appreciation for our country is to have a universal obligation for service, not necessarily military service, but service of a year or two in defense and support of our nation. Because it does, as we had with conscription, underscore the fact that as citizens, we have an obligation to commit our time and our talent to our country. Whereas now, of course, with military service, we're relying only on those people who volunteer, which is often just 1% of the country is the pool that we're drawing from for military service. So many people effectively have opted out of the responsibility, collective responsibility, that we have as citizens of the nation. I was saying to you, Charity, earlier that if anyone has not been to a naturalization ceremony and see what people go through in the process of becoming United States citizens and the sacrifices they made in traveling here, either as refugees or by choice, and study and preparation, they see their citizenship naturalization ceremony as their second birth. I think there's a kind of casual nature to citizenship for those of us who are born here. And so seeing these ceremonies where people choose to become citizens is just exceptional.
Let's get back to the phones. Anne is on the line in Cedar Falls. Hi, Anne.
Hi. The other day I heard a quote, "America isn't finished. It's still becoming." And patriotism to me is the idea that we're all contributing to that becoming. And the world is forever changing. And so it would seem that we need to question to survive in it. And the founding fathers and mothers, they themselves questioned, and here we are in our country.
Well, Anne, thank you so much for sharing that. Let's go next to Don in Woodward. Hi, Don. Oh, I think we've lost Don off the line. Lori's on the line in Columbus Junction. Hi, Lori.
Hi. I just wanted to agree with the person that talked about giving a year or two of service to your country. They do that in Israel. Many Scandinavian countries do it. I believe France, if I could be wrong, also does that. What is wrong that we don't want to give a year or two of service to our country? Not in war necessarily, but in nursing homes, in doing something that is productive and forward-thinking for America.
Interesting point, Lori. And do you know historically why we don't do that, Tim?
No, I don't know the evolution of how it developed in Israel or in Europe, but conscription has always been a controversial issue. Certainly it was during the Civil War. And I suppose it touches upon individual freedom, that no one denigrates someone who individually chooses to contribute or volunteer for service. But when we require it or force them to do it, it seems to be a limitation on their individual rights, their birthright, their freedom. So I don't. Perhaps Donna has a thought on that.
And I might add here, while service, public service, isn't compulsory, there are still ways, pardon me, that young people can contribute through the Peace Corps, for example.
And AmeriCorps.
Through AmeriCorps. And these are opportunities that young people may take, but they don't have to take. And there have at times been politicians who have floated the idea of expanding that out, that notion out, to do something like some of these other countries do in terms of compulsory public service, so that you have to give a year before you, maybe between high school and college, or maybe after college, so that you would contribute in some way. And it could be, again, contributing to the infrastructure of the United States. It could be helping out disadvantaged communities. It could be serving in the military. And that is something that I think oftentimes doesn't pick up much steam, in part because of the notion that Tim mentioned of individual freedom, but also this notion of capitalism, and if I want to, you know, go out and get filthy rich, I have the ability to do that, and America is a great country because I can do that. But sometimes people don't understand that the opportunity that people have in this country is supported by infrastructure the government provides, for example, like roads and bridges and those kinds of things. And so politicians occasionally talk about this, but it's usually a voluntary aspect. Occasionally somebody will mention compulsory public service, but it's usually kind of as a talking point to get then people talking about trying to expand out the ways that, or to encourage young people to give something back to their country.
We have this comment from Keisha Scott of Grinnell College. She says, patriot is the root word of patriotism, which holds me to the action to love my country and to be responsible to it. As a patriot, I just don't demand rights. My rights from are never independent from my rights to. And I'm glad to use my privilege as a patriot to love my country enough to be responsible for it. We have this thought from Larry in Alden. He said, I'm very wary about the word patriotism and its use. It's often a word used without a consensus regarding meaning to elevate those who think like us and demote those who we do not like or are in opposition to our way of thinking or acting. It can be a very divisive word. And Donna, that's what one of the things we're seeing right now, and I think we've seen throughout history at different times, patriotism is a word that can be used as a weapon.
Right, it is. And it can be used, you know, to accuse someone of being unpatriotic, oftentimes can be a way to shut down the debate or shut down the discussion. And that's precisely what we don't need in a country where there are so many paradoxes, where there are so many perspectives, where there are so many backgrounds, that to get across these hurdles, if you will, we need constructive engagement on these particular issues. So talking in public schools, for example, about the internment of Japanese Americans, for example, is a way to talk to students and socialize them in terms of history, but also this kind of more reflexive patriotism. It's still a patriotism, but more reflexive in that sense. And discussion and debate and discourse are things that advance the fortunes of the country, get us closer to that more perfect union, as they put into the Constitution, that we'll never get to, I think, but we are always striving to.
Here's a comment from Pat Kinney in Waterloo. He said, to me, one of the most patriotic things we can do as citizens is to honor and remember our veterans and their families and not forget them when they get back home. This means helping them with counseling, employment, family support, and making them feel they are appreciated long after they take off the uniform. We have a lot of vets from all wars still struggling with PTSD, some well into their 90s. I've interviewed many of them and their families who lived with it for years as a matter of course. Those scars don't go away. It's perfectly American to debate and question the wisdom of a conflict, but not the service of a veteran. Also, we must never forget families who've lost loved ones in war. We have just a couple of minutes left. So many people who want to share their thoughts, and clearly a lot of people who care so much about this concept of patriotism and about the country that we live in. I mean, Tim, right now, as I mentioned, we're in a moment where this word is being used in some ways like a weapon. You've seen patriotism, the feeling of patriotism, rise and fall through the years. Is there a different way to talk about this? Is there a better way to talk about this that gets more to the core of our commitment to our nation?
I think the best thing and the hope that I take away from this conversation and all the calls that really the folks who couldn't exercise their free speech rights on the radio is that we are talking about it. And we're talking about it without apprehension or fear, that we can express our views, however controversial, without the expectation that we will be turned into the authorities or somehow be questioned about our values or beliefs. And so that is fundamental to the American experience and fundamental to what we mean about being patriotic. Yes, there is, unfortunately, times when people are using patriotism and the flag as a wedge, and we have to either rise above those comments and go on and not to ignore the fact that those who don't agree with us are just as much patriotic as we are.
Donna, do you have anything you want to add to that idea? Maybe a different way to get to the core of why this is so difficult for us?
You know, I think public life in the United States has improved, whether we're talking about patriotism or whether we're talking about fundamental disagreements on any policy issue, by understanding the perspective that people are coming from to that issue. And again, not demonizing people, but engaging in constructive dialogue, whether it's about patriotism or whether it's about policy issues, can do nothing but further the ideals that this country stands for. And those are always useful things to keep in mind in engaging fellow citizens about patriotism or any other kind of issue.
Well, Donna Hoffman, thank you so much for being here today.
You're welcome.
Donna Hoffman, Department Head and Associate Professor of Political Science at the University of Northern Iowa. Tim Walch, thank you for being here today.
Thanks, Charity.
Thanks, Tim Walch. He's the former director of the Herbert Hoover Library and Museum. And thank you if you participated in the conversation today. We had many more phone calls, many more emails that we weren't able to share on the air today. But thank you for contributing. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. The show is produced by Ben Stanton, Lindsay Moon, Emily Woodbury, and Dennis Reese. You can get in touch with us anytime. Email talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. I'm Charity Nebbie.